You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
Let's talk about outing. Here's what outing is. When someone is closeted, when someone is lying about their sexual orientation, about what they're up to sexually, doing one thing in private and a whole another thing in public, that can make them a target for outing. Now, outing is a brutal tactic, and it should be reserved as a political tool for taking on brutes. You out a Larry Craig, a sitting U.S. Republican senator who was anti-gay, had a grotesquely anti-gay voting record, backed the Defense of Marriage Act, opposed the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, opposed protections against hate crimes for LGBT people, just voted every time he possibly could. Anything he could possibly do, because he was a religious conservative and a Republican from Idaho, anything he could do to hurt gay people from his position of political power, he did. And he was sucking cock in restrooms, in toilets. Famously, he's the guy who was tapping his toes with a wide stance in a restroom in Minneapolis's airport. He got caught red-handed and cock-mouthed and outed, consequently. And he was a deserving target of outing. If somebody had the drop on him, if somebody knew what he was up to and had some sort of proof and had come forward to out him, that would have worked too. It wouldn't necessarily have taken a police sting. That was the case with the Reverend Ted Haggard. He was the head of the National Association of Evangelicals. He was a huge force in the right-wing Christian movement. He had a weekly phone conversation with George W. Bush while he was president, founded this insane megachurch in Colorado Springs, Colorado, the Evangelical Vatican, they call it, and was opposed to gay people, against gay marriage, thought gay people and gay sex was sick and sinful and twisted and blah, 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 and was having sex with a male prostitute that was also getting meth for him at his request. And that guy, that male sex worker, rightfully so, outed Ted Haggard for his hypocrisy, took his story to ABC News and outed the motherfucker. And he deserved it, right? Because of that conflict between his private conduct, which I think people have a right to privacy, and his public life, that cognitive dissonance, that battle. It's like Barney Frank said on Real Time. We all have a right to privacy. What we don't have a right to is hypocrisy. And if you go to work on Monday morning and beat the fuck out of gay people Monday through Friday at work, and then Saturday and Sunday you are fellating them, that's hypocrisy. If you secretly are one. And that's how those sorts of closet cases work. They protect themselves. They protect their own closets by being grotesquely anti-gay, so that no one will suspect them of being gay, because look at their anti-gay voting record. Look at the things they say from the pulpit. Who could ever suspect they might be gay themselves? So there's this incentive for these closet cases to be worse than just the average homophobe might be. Not enough that you disapprove, you have to be seen publicly beating the shit out of. And so sexual minority communities, to protect ourselves, we have outed people to steal power away from these gay, anti-gay monsters. So that's outing, which brings us to the Ashley Madison hack. As I said last month when the news first broke of the Ashley Madison hack, I thought this was terrible. People were online, people were on Twitter celebrating the Ashley Madison hack, saying that they were delighted at the prospect of the hackers releasing all of the names and personal details of everyone who is a member of Ashley Madison. Ashley Madison, for those of you who have been living under a rock, was a hookup site, a dating site for married people who wanted to have an affair. Their motto was, life is short, have an affair. They promised all of their clients, their customers, that their data was more secure at Ashley Madison than anywhere else, that they had insanely airtight security protocols, and it turns out not to have been true. And all of their data was stolen. And a month after the news of the hack broke, the hackers released all of Ashley Madison users' data. And people's names are out there, their credit card information is out there, their email addresses are out there, and people are being outed. And that's a tragedy, right? People who are having affairs. Oh my God. And whenever anybody says that they're having an affair, everyone's mental image is some asshole cheating on someone who loves him very much and leaving her at home crying with, you know, her 8-month-old baby. And that's just not the way it works. There's a lot of people who are on those sites, who are on Ashley Madison because they are in ethical open relationships or because they are trapped in sexless or unloving or emotionally unfulfilling marriages that for practical and legitimate reasons they cannot leave. Not everyone is in an economic position to be able to leave their spouse. One of the things that people noted in the 2008 economic crisis was that divorce rates plummeted. People sometimes can't afford to leave each other, and so they don't, and then they make compromises, accommodations. They do what they need to do to stay sane in that marriage that they are trapped in. That's one reason that a lot of people cheat. And as we've talked about in this show endlessly, some people have good cause to cheat. And some people are assholes and serial adulterers and monsters who should be left and who should be perhaps condemned by their friends and family members and people who it involves. But you can't tell just by finding somebody's name on the Ashley Madison dump in that dump of data whether they were a good cheater or a bad cheater. And yes, there are good cheaters out there. So I'm opposed to this hack. I'm opposed to the dump of the data. I'm opposed to outing all of these nobody adulterers, all of these cheaters, some of whom may not have been cheating at all or may not have been cheating their partners out of anything their partners wanted or valued because they're private citizens, because they're not harming anyone else, because they're nobodies. The first person, public figure, to be outed in the Ashley Madison hack, where it rose to the level of a legitimate outing, Josh Duggar, oldest son of Jim Bob and Michelle Duggar of the Duggars, formerly of television, formerly of 19 Kids and Counting, currently still of the quiverful right-wing radical Christian fecundity movement. They are fundamentalist Christians who believe that they should have as many children as physically possible because they regard their children as weapons to be used in a war to seize control of the country and establish a Christian dictatorship. That is what they're about. And it was also cute and charming and funny on TV, wasn't it? So you read a little bit about the Quiverful movement that they were proselytizing for and stumping for and advocating, and you're like, oh, this is a little creepy and fucked up. Put all these people in hijabs, change the name Jim Bob to Muhammad, and right-wing Christians would be freaking the fuck out about these religious conservatives of a different stripe who are weaponizing their uteruses. Anyway, Josh Duggar, oldest son, went from the family compound to the Family Research Council, where he was the head of their action group. He was the head of their political action, whatever. He was the president of it. And he ran around the country stumping against same-sex marriage, against marriage equality, attacking abortion rights, attacking trans kids. That was his job. And he pounded the lectern and talked about morality and how we needed to bring America back to God and protect the family, protect marriage from all of those people who want to get married who are queer. Got to protect marriage from them. They're destroying marriage, destroying the family. Thus said Josh Duggar, who, as it turns out, not only did we learn 3 months ago, had molested his sisters when he was an adolescent and another girl unrelated to him when he was an adolescent, but had also been a member of Ashley Madison, we find out in the Ashley Madison dump. Josh Duggar had 2 active accounts and an OkCupid profile and a fake Facebook page where he was an entirely different person, where he was looking for casual sex and fantasy fulfillment and extended foreplay and hot babes. And he was friends with hookers, sex workers, and strippers on his Facebook page, his secret private Facebook page under a different name. Radar called friendships with sex workers and hookers depraved. His depraved Facebook account. There's nothing depraved about having strippers and sex workers as buddies. What's depraved is being a hypocritical closet case. What's depraved is attacking people for the thing that you are doing yourself. Just like Larry Craig, when he was a U.S. senator, attacked gay people for that thing he was doing himself in bathrooms and airports. Josh Duggar was attacking gay people for the supposed crime of attacking marriage, of destroying traditional marriage. All the while, Josh Duggar was fucking other women, was cheating on his sad sack wife, Anna, who has now accepted responsibility for her husband's infidelity. That's part of the Quiverful movement. Raise girls to be stupid and gullible. Raise girls to regard themselves as the property of their brothers, fathers, husbands. Put it on girls' heads that if your husband strays, it's because you weren't putting out constantly. Because the only reason anybody ever cheats is because they can't fuck the person they've already been fucking for a very long time, which is actually not how it works. People cheat for all sorts of different reasons, including the desire for something different, maybe once or twice in their life. But Anna Duggar is blaming herself for Josh Duggar attacking marriage. And why did Josh Duggar, in the statement he released, why did he attack marriage, his own marriage? Because he watched pornography. Satan built a fortress in his heart with old copies of Hustler and Penthouse from the resale shop, because you can't even buy those in corner stores anymore. Satan, Josh Duggar said, built a fortress of porn in his heart, and that, of course, made Josh into, in his own words, the biggest hypocrite ever. And all of us out here who watch or consume porn without becoming towering, monstrous prick hypocrites are left to wonder, how is it that it works this way just in Christian land? That you take pornography and you throw it into a room with some good Christian men and lock the door, and a half an hour later, when you unlock the door, outpour all of these possessed cheaters and sex addicts. Doesn't seem to have that effect on people who aren't fundy Christian nutbags. Doesn't seem to have that effect on people who haven't been raised in a faith that pits them against their own natural desires. On some level, reading about Josh Duggar this week, I almost feel sorry for the child molesting hypocrite piece of shit. Almost. Because he is a victim of the indoctrination that his sisters are also being victimized by. It's not healthy to teach girls that they are the property of the men in their lives, that they're their father's property and then their husband's property. It's also not healthy to teach men that about girls, or to teach boys that about girls. Josh Duggar clearly suffers from that Madonna whore thing. There was the wife that he had to fuck and was allowed to fuck, and how much fun was that? So he went out and met strippers and committed adultery and lived a little. It would have been better for Josh Duggar if he could have seen through the sex negative, porn negative, reality negative bullshit his parents had pounded into his head all of his life and reconciled those two halves of himself. The half that wanted to be a family man and the half that wanted to have some sexual adventures. But he couldn't reconcile those two things. He had to publicly rail against the boogeyman, that would be the gays, because that absolved him of the sin of his straight boogeyman shit that he was engaging in. Tony Perkins, in the wake of the Josh Duggar revelation, the latest one, said that Josh Duggar has hurt the Christian family movement, which is hilarious because when it came out that Josh Duggar had only at age 15 molested four of his younger sisters and a family friend, Tony Perkins was praying for Josh Duggar. Now that Josh Duggar has been revealed to be a towering, cheating hypocrite, he's hurt the family movement, according to Tony Perkins, his former boss at Family Research Council. Molest them, kids, you haven't hurt a religious movement. Cheat on your wife, you've hurt a religious movement. And think about what Tony Perkins means when he says that. He's hurt the Christian family movement. Josh Duggar has made it harder for the Christian family movement to hurt other families. Because that's what the Christian family movement, as represented by the Family Research Council, is all about. It's about attacking same-sex couples and their families. It's about attacking families with gay, lesbian, bi, or trans children that are doing right by them. So it's not just about attacking same-sex couples. It's also about attacking opposite-sex couples. It's about attacking churches that are queer-affirming and accepting, which FRC regularly does. So if Josh Duggar has made it harder for FRC to do all of that, to attack same-sex couples, to attack children who are queer, to attack trans kids, they're all over attacking trans kids, implying that trans kids in public restrooms are there to rape other kids. Josh Duggar made it harder for FRC and Tony Perkins to do all that. I guess we should be sending Josh Duggar thank you notes. Thank you, Josh Duggar, for your towering hypocrisy. Thank you, Josh Duggar, for being such a messy, conflicted, porn-addicted, Satan fortress constructed with an idiot. Because you have damaged an organization that exists to damage American families and American children. So thanks, Josh Duggar, bringing this all the way around back to outing. I am against outing, except when it's called for. Brutal tactics should be reserved for brutes. Josh Duggar was a brute. Professionally, that was the line of work Josh Duggar was going into. The Franklin Graham line of work, the Brian Brown line of work, the professional brute who criticizes, blames, slams, attacks other people who live their lives by their own light, who are doing what they want to do with people who want to do it with them and not harming anyone. Josh Duggar was monetizing hatred and bigotry for a living. Demagoguing, pointing a finger at same-sex couples and accusing same-sex couples by merely existing of attacking opposite-sex couples, of undermining or destroying traditional marriage. And by traditional, they just mean opposite sex. So Josh Duggar really had it coming. Josh Duggar is a legitimate target for outing. There is too much collateral damage here to out Josh Duggar for his hypocrisy, to harm FRC in this way, wasn't worth the other millions and millions and millions of people who were outed collaterally. There have been two suicides that we know of so far of people whose names popped up in the Ashley Madison dump. There are people in Saudi Arabia where adultery, infidelity, is punishable by death who have been outed in the Ashley Madison dump. There are gay people. I didn't know there were gay people on Ashley Madison, but there were gay people on Ashley Madison seeking same-sex sex with other married, closeted gay people. And some of those gay people are in Saudi Arabia, where not only adultery is a death penalty offense, but so is homosexuality. People are going to die. And our sympathies should be there. Those are the people we should really feel sorry for. We don't have to feel sorry for Josh Duggar. Josh Duggar is the tiny, tiny silver lining in a massive black cloud that is the Ashley Madison dump. The silver speck in that enormous black cloud. And he had it coming. And I suspect as more of the data is dumped, just this week we learned there's twice as much that's about to come out. A dump, a subsequent dump, twice as large as the previous one. More Christian conservative lying sack of shit hypocrites will be exposed. They will be outed. And I have one more thing to say about the Ashley Madison dump to those of you quickly who are elated by it, who are saying cheaters get what they deserve, who are happy about this. I want you to think for just a second about everything you've ever done or said online. Every website you've ever joined, every dating hookup app you've ever been a part of, every porn site you've ever visited, all the sexting that you've done with partners, the texting. We are all vulnerable in this way. With the exception of the public moralizing, scold, hypocrite shitbags like Josh Duggar, I think we should all have sympathy for the outed cheaters, even the cheaters who are cheating their partners out of something they wanted and valued. I'm not asking you to sign off on cheating. I'm asking you to sign off on there, but for the grace of God, go I. Because even if you aren't a cheater, even if that's something you would never do, statistics tell us, we look at them, we know that everybody's something. Maybe you have a FetLife account, or you have a secret double life. You're not out about being kinky. You've sexted, most likely. You have sent around pictures. You've sent dirty texts. Maybe you flirted with a coworker over text. We are all a hack, a lost laptop, a stolen cell phone away from the kind of exposure and public humiliation that the innocent cheaters, many of them, on Ashley Madison are going through today. And we should ache for them a little bit because it could be our number next, our FetLife account, our personal accounts from before we were married, our sects, our emails, all of us are at risk of this same kind of violation. There is rage being directed at the Ashley Madison clients. The hackers themselves said they were doing it to punish these people. For what? For their private sexual conduct. Then it was wrong, maybe. And all I'm saying to everybody out there, I'm looking at Twitter right now, everybody out there who thinks this is awesome, is that if or when it happens to you, it's not going to feel so awesome. And we may live in a world where this, in turn, one by one, happens to each of us. So maybe our tack should be, when this happens, to shrug it off. To say, yep, people are messy. People are complicated. People can be one thing in public and another thing online. It doesn't mean they're bad people. And when we say that about others, we're saying that about ourselves too. And we know it to be true. Okay, coming up today on the regular show, we got tons of your cues. And on the Magnum, www.savagelovecast.com, where you can subscribe to the Magnum. On the Magnum, we have our frequent and very welcome guest, Mistress Matisse, here to talk with us about sex work and to give some advice to a newbie kinkster. Coming up today on the show. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by NatureBox. NatureBox ships great-tasting, wholesome snacks right to your door. Forget the vending machine at work and start snacking smarter with wholesome, delicious treats like mango orange fruit chews. Support the Lovecast by ordering a NatureBox sampler box on them at naturebox.com/savage. That's naturebox.com/savage. This episode of the Lovecast is brought to you by Stamps.com. Buy and print official U.S. postage using your own computer and your own printer. For a special offer, which includes a digital scale and up to $55 worth of free postage, go to stamps.com and enter Savage.
Hey, Dan. I'm 41-year-old straight female, and I have been married for a year and been with my partner for 4 years. Right now, we have a 9-month-old baby, and he is not living at the house with us. He has moved out. Basically, because I asked him to leave because he was exhibiting fits of rage, some provoked, some just out of nowhere. And it has come to my attention, you know, far too late, really, that he has some mental health challenges around depression and anxiety. Things started to go south when we started to try to have a family together. I should probably also say that he's 7 years younger than me. He just sort of started exhibiting behaviors of not being responsible and not being ready. I had 2 miscarriages, neither of which he provided very good support for me during those, and probably not I for him either, because, you know, I was going through my own feelings of loss and sadness, and then not getting support from him just made me want to shut down. And he was lying to me about money, spending money that was mine, and then hoping I didn't find out about it, which I did, and borrowing money from my friend and asking her not to tell me, and just all of these really weird things, like being sneaky and hiding, which I later found out just recently was because he didn't feel adequate. I had been in a lot of relationships where I got ripped off. I got left holding the bag. I took these men in, and, you know, I'm really good with money. I'm really good with manifesting. I'm really good with getting what I want out of life in a good way. And then I often get taken advantage of. We bought a house together. We finally got pregnant and sustained the pregnancy and have a 9-month-old. During my pregnancy, he was a maniac, getting blackout drunk, running around with people 10 years younger than him, made friends with another female that made me uncomfortable, decided that instead of limiting contact with this female, that he was going to increase his contact with her, whether or not it bothered me. And I know that this gentleman, this man that I love, is just hurting and trying to figure out his role in the world and being afraid that he's a dad and being afraid to be a husband. But I love him and I want him to come back. And I'll wrap it up now. The one thing that I haven't been able to give him much of is space, because I've been hormonal and either just having miscarried or pregnant or just having a new baby. And I needed him and I was needy and codependent. And now he's getting the space and now he thinks he doesn't love me in the same way anymore and doesn't know if he's going to come home. And I'm here with 2 kids, one from a different partnership, just trying to hold it together. And I don't know what to do.
This guy is doing you a favor that you can't see. There seems to be a lot of things that over the course of this relationship that you didn't see. For instance, someone who was a lousy partner to you, a lousy husband to you as you suffered through two miscarriages, probably not going to be a great parent, probably not going to be suddenly a great partner and wonderful husband when there's an infant in the house. This guy is kind of a mess and kind of a train wreck. You, however, don't sound like a mess, don't sound like a train wreck. You describe yourself as very capable, very able, very good with money, very responsible. And yet, you choose these guys. You pick men who are irresponsible, who are out of control, who are everything you're not. You choose these men that, in a way, are you reaching out and slamming your hand down on the self-destruct button. And I would ask you, not what's wrong with him. This guy, we can all see what's wrong with him. He's a mess. He's irresponsible. He's bad with money. He's an asshole. But I would ask you, what's wrong with you? There's a whole lot right with you. But there's something singular, not plural, not many things, not even big, huge, enormous things. Well, it's kind of a big thing. There's one thing wrong with you, which is this pattern of choosing these awful partners, choosing these guys who are irresponsible and out of control and sticking by them and saying that you love them and wanting them back into your life. And I don't know what sort of game, you know, you take some responsibility, you say you were codependent, you say you were very needy, you say you're very hormonal. I don't know what ringer you put this guy through, right? There's his side of the story too, but there's a reason he's gone and I think it's him. And it's good that he's gone. So even if I had a magic word, I had a magic potion, even if I had a bouquet of love in idleness flowers, please Google Midsummer Night's Dream, you will get the reference, I wouldn't give you one. I wouldn't give you a petal because I don't want you to get this guy back. You don't really want this guy back. Maybe you want an idea of a guy. You want an idea of a co-parent. You want an idea of a loving husband. But this guy ain't any of that shit. And you and your children, plural, are well rid of him and his irresponsibility, his drama, and his issues. And for the benefit of your children, you need to get a grip on your issues. I would get thee to a therapist, go, to talk this shit out at great length. Not his shit, your shit. And figure out how to identify and choose better partners in the future. But this guy, your soon-to-be ex-husband, I think I speak for everyone listening when I say, I am glad he's going to be your ex-husband. And one day you will be glad he's your ex-husband. And your children and his child will be glad of him being your ex-husband someday. And here's hoping, with some therapy and some introspection and some thought, you will have a better husband, a better partner, and they will have a better father figure in their lives in the future.
Hey, Dan, it is Corey, and I'm calling from Toronto, Ontario. I'm calling because my brother recently went to Australia and he met a guy who he had some drinks with and went home to his place with his girlfriend because he had invited him. And it was all very much about let's go home and have some drinks and blah, blah, blah. And the guy was very nice and very lovely. However, my brother needed to really go to the washroom. He needed to go pee. All right, Dan, you need to go pee. Bad. So they went to the guy's house, and before they got in, my brother told the guy that he needed to pee really badly. And the guy said, no problem, let's just pee outside. Let's just pee on the lawn. Which, obviously, two straight guys, by the way, I'm gay, but two straight guys pee against the wind, and it's all okay. With me, I might get sexually attracted. So anyway, my brother starts peeing, and all of a sudden, the guy beside him says, have you ever drank your mate's piss? And my brother obviously was like, no, can't say that that's ever happened to me. And then he, by he, I mean the guy beside him, says, oh, well, it kind of tastes salty and warm. No worries, let me try yours. And bends over immediately while my brother is midstream and drinks my brother's piss. My brother, of course, is midstream. It's very difficult for him to just stop peeing because, let's be honest, when you are mid-pee, you don't really end up having the control unless you've been doing your Kegels. And he is completely overwhelmed by the fact that someone is drinking his piss. So my brother finally stops, and so does the guy who's drinking his pee. And my brother says, "What the fuck is going on?" And the guy says, "Oh, no worries. It's all good. We all do that." Turns out the guy that he met is from the UK, and the guy that he met also said that it's normal in the UK to drink your mate's piss. I'm wondering, is this actually real? Is this actually true? Because I call bullshit on this one, but what do you think?
Actually, there's a scene in Love's Labor's Lost where the two straight guys who are buddies in that drink each other's piss. No, this is not a thing. This does not happen. Sure, there are people out there who drink piss. There are probably straight guys out there after a long night, homosocialing around with their straight mates, perhaps have taken a walk on the wild side and done something crazy, perhaps a blowjob, maybe a little bit of piss drinking. But this is not a thing that guys in the UK do, that mates do for mates. Perhaps that is how this guy talked your brother into doing it. Maybe your brother is gullible, not just gulpable, but gullible, and he fell for this and went for it. But I would consider your brother, in unpacking the story, a highly unreliable narrator, because talking to you, his gay brother, confiding in you, telling you this story about this crazy fucking thing he did, he may not, you know, if he is straight identified, but he has a tiny little bit of same-sex attraction or desire in him, he may have gone for it, but wants to share this story with you about this phenomena, guy drank my piss, oh my God, without admitting to you, his gay brother, that he might like a little man-on-man action too every once in a while, because I promise you what probably went down that night was your brother, or that guy went down on your brother, and somehow a little bit of oral turned into, I gotta piss, well, go ahead, piss in my mouth since your dick's already in my mouth, and your brother was like, perhaps drunk, and went, all right, whatever, here we go. Because come on, use your common sense. Your brother is taking a whiz on someone's lawn, and that person leaps in front of his stream with their mouth open. What would the reaction be of any even plastered individual at that moment, as someone who has never been interested in somebody drinking his piss in his life or having some other dude's mouth near his cock in his whole life? If someone is charging towards his dick as he pisses with their mouth open, a guy, your brother would take a step to the left, turn his hips in one direction or the other, directing the stream away and his dick away from the gaping maw of this person that he has no sexual interest in or attraction for. I'm betting your brother went out and got drunk. He met perhaps one of the rare guys on the planet who are an exception to his otherwise usual female target interest, female erotic target interest. Went for it, did something crazy, wanted to tell somebody what he did, wanted an answer about whether this piss drinking thing is a thing people do, and so put it all on the other guy, told you this crazy story that can be disproved with a Google search. Do mates drink each other's piss in England and the United Kingdom as a thing? No results will pop up, I promise you. Because he wanted to hear from you about this phenomenon, guys drinking each other's piss. But he couldn't talk to you about it, honestly, because he didn't want to come out to you, his gay brother, about the little sliver of him, the walk on the wild side chunk of him that may be up for a little man-on-man every now and then. There's got to be a better way to mail and ship stuff. Going to the post office takes up too much time, and leasing a postage meter is way too expensive. And true story, here in Seattle, on election day, in a city with only mail-in ballots, the post office closed their one post office location in the center of the city all day without saying anything to anyone, and people were scrambling to get their ballots in the mail. But it turns out there is a better way for you and for all those people who couldn't get their ballots in the mail in Seattle on election day, and that is stamps.com. With stamps.com, you can buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter or package right from your desk. Using your own computer and printer, your ballot will never be in the mail late again. You can even get special postage discounts you can't find at the post office. Plus, stamps.com is more powerful than a postage meter at just a fraction of the cost. You can save at least 50% compared to a postage meter, and you'll avoid those time-consuming trips to post office locations that could be closed even on election day. Right now, use my name, Savage, for this special offer, a four-week trial plus $110 bonus offer. This includes a digital scale and up to $55 worth of free postage. Don't wait. Go to stamps.com, and before you do anything else, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in Savage. That's stamps.com. Click the mic and enter S-A-V-A-G-E.
Hi, Dan. A couple of years ago, I started dating a guy at work, which is mistake number one. It only lasted a couple of months, but before we started hooking up, I let him know I was a carrier of HSV2, the genital herpes virus. But I really liked him, and I thought that it was going to last longer. It quickly fizzled, but we remained friends. A couple of years later, which is now, he started hooking up with a girl we work with, and she's psycho. She's like the closest to, but not quite, worst-case scenario. She stirs the pot a lot. She's really dramatic. The juicier the information, the better, and she talks a lot. They were discussing their sexual history, and for some god-awful reason, my name came up. If he was so compelled to divulge the information of hooking up with someone with an STI, I don't really think that he needed to say my name, but that's beside the point. He spilled the beans, and now everyone at work knows that I have herpes. When people ask me about it, I deflect and tell them that I've heard rumors about me too, and that rumors fade. Like, basically, don't feed the animal. Like, I just want it to blow over as quickly as possible. But I am so hurt, and I feel like my privacy has been completely violated. I see myself so far removed from their situation that this should never have been an issue. Like, I'm not fucking him, I'm not fucking her, so what is the point of talking about me? They are not using condoms, and neither of them have gone and got STI checks, and that doesn't have anything to do with me. I'm not part of their triangle at all. And my question is, like, what do I do? What can I say? I feel like she's the kind of girl that's like a ticking time bomb, and that if I try to talk to her, it'll blow up into something way worse. Like, I'm a nice person. I stood up for her when people were talking shit. Like, I tell people that everyone's fighting their own battles and not make life worse for anybody else. Like, I was there for her through a lot of tough shit, and I don't know. I've protected her against work-based drama, too. So the social stigma of HSV2 is so much worse than having the actual virus, but I don't know what else to say. Am I doing it right? And telling people to mind their own business? What else can I do?
Hey, it's Dan Savage.
I'm actually at work right now.
You're right. Oh, my God, you're at work. You're right to be angry and fuck her and fuck him and... it's a bigger shame, and there should be a bigger stigma on being an asshole and a blabbermouth
and
having herpes, which is really not a big deal in the grand scheme of things. And I'm sorry this has been happening to you. It's terrible.
Is it right to just kind of deflect? I just am kind of like not answering it and not addressing it.
There's two ways you could go. You could either just deflect and like say, you know, that's not anything I want to talk about. There's also, and I know this like embraces the stigma, but it would be a good kind of karate move on the two of them to be like, that's not true. I don't have herpes. I don't know why they would say that, which makes them look like crazy vindictive psychos, which they are, or she is, but you would have to buy into the stigma of there's something shameful in having herpes and denying it. But you could, you know, I'm rubber, you're glue, bounces off me, sticks to you. Because if she's running her mouth about this, she's trying to make you look bad. And you need to, like, you know, and you can also, like, set that aside and just say, you know who really looks bad in all of this? She does. Millions and millions of people have herpes. Most people who have it don't even know they have it. They've never had a symptom. Most people have had it at one outbreak, never again. It's not that big a deal. You know what's a big deal? Being a fucking psycho asshole all your life is a big deal. And it's going to cause her many more problems than having herpes is ever going to cause me.
Yes.
And you could just rattle that off.
Yeah, I love you.
You could memorize that and rattle that off in the faces of any coworkers who bring it up. Millions of people have it.
Might.
Most people don't know. You could have it. That crazy bitch, she could have it. Herpes is not a big deal. Being an asshole is. And she's an asshole.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it so much. And thank you for calling me back.
You're welcome. And good luck with your coworkers and everything else.
All right. Thanks a bunch.
Bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
We know you're going to be tempted to snack. I know I am tempted to snack. And with NatureBox, you can give into that temptation, but in a smart way that makes you feel great. In the last box we got here at Savage Lovecast Labs, we tore into the Masa Crisps and the Guacamole Bites, and they lasted approximately 13 seconds before they were just empty bags and crumbs all over the floor, which I made the tech-savvy at-risk youth clean up with their tongues because I am the boss. NatureBox has over 100 ridiculously delicious snacks to choose from that get delivered directly to your doorstep. And there's zero chance of getting bored because they release brand new choices every single month. NatureBox is full of flavor, but without any of the junk, just fun, flavorful snacks made with ingredients that you can trust. Plus, they've got a smart snack guarantee, so if there's ever anything you don't love, let the helpful folks at NatureBox know and they will replace it in next month's box. Easy and satisfying. And right now, you can enjoy your first box of NatureBox snacks on them, but only at naturebox.com/savage and only if you act fast. Head over to naturebox.com/savage right now to get this box into your snacking life. One last time, that's naturebox.com/savage for your first box of Beyond Tasty hand-picked snacks sent directly to your doorstep.
Hi, Dan. I am calling in search of advice for how I can help my friend deal with her very recent divorce. She is young. She's in her mid-20s. Well, the breakup started happening a few months ago. Basically, when she was 7 months pregnant with her second child with her husband, he told her he didn't love her. He hadn't loved her for a while. He'd been cheating on her basically since they got together, and he was going to leave her for another woman, which was a complete shock for everyone. It's been a few months, and she's kind of starting to make a game plan. She's been meeting with lawyers and counselors, and you know, the first steps of the actual legal proceedings are kind of starting to happen. My question is in how I can best support her with all of this. On the one hand, what he did was completely, completely shitty. The ultimate act of betrayal, and I've just been letting her, you know, vent and call him all the names that she wants to, and I've just kind of been telling her what she wants to hear. But, you know, lately it's been kind of difficult for me to do that because, on the other hand, marriage is a two-way street, and while what he did was shitty, he had his reasons for doing so, and she obviously played some part in that happening. So part of me wants to, you know, gently nudge her to openly communicate with him and ask him actually why this happened, why he was unhappy, and maybe have her, you know, recognize that she did play some part in it, although she didn't know it. But maybe it's, you know, hasn't been enough time and the wound is still too fresh. I'm just not really sure, but I do kind of want to help her learn and grow from this if I can. I don't know. I'm totally at a loss, Dan. I'd love if you could help me.
So are you one of the women that this friend of yours' husband had an affair with? That's all I could end up thinking. That's the only thing that makes your call make sense, that this desire to shift the blame or to encourage your friend at this moment where she's abandoned with an infant to take the time to identify her own responsibility for her husband's philandering and lying to her throughout the life of their marriage. And you want her to take some time right now to sit down and look in a mirror and identify her flaws and the ways that she contributed to this, how she might have been at least partially the author of her own misery. This is not what a friend does for a friend when a friend has been fucked over viciously by her soon-to-be ex-husband. You know, maybe there's a time down the road for some scrutiny. Earlier today in the show, I was talking to a woman with the, you know, lousy husband who abandoned her, and I encouraged her to take responsibility for all the shitty men that she'd picked and that she needed to engage in a little bit of introspection, maybe get herself into therapy, because there was a pattern. There's not necessarily a pattern here. Your friend could have drawn the short fucking straw. Some people are shitty people. Some people are awful husbands, and sometimes awful husbands and awful wives happen to good people. This sounds like very likely is one of those times. I know marriage is a two-way street, but asshole is often a one-way street. And your obsession, not obsession, maybe that's too strong a word, your concern trolling around your friend's need to identify her own contribution here, because marriage is a two-way street, isn't compassion, it isn't friendship, and it isn't called for, because there isn't a pattern here, right? It's not like your friend consistently has chosen asshole shitty husbands and you need to talk to her about why she continues to choose these asshole shitty husbands. It's not like someone who's married to a philandering piece of shit, if they only set all the dials correctly in the marriage, if only the meals were cooked properly and on time, if only the laundry was done, if only the blowjobs were given joyfully and frequently, they never would have been cheated on by their asshole philandering spouse. That's just not how it works. There's some serial adulterer shit stains out there who lie to people, misrepresent themselves, and shred those people and spit them back out on their way out the door. That's what it sounds like happened to your friend to me. And I hear a lot of these stories. And if I were your friend's friend, and I don't want to pat myself in the back, but I think I might be a better friend to your friend right now than you're capable of being, I would be there with the ice cream. I would be there with the Netflix. I would be there with the sympathetic ear. I would be there with the bullshit detectors on full throttle to help her when she's getting into a new relationship, really suss the guy out because her own judgment perhaps was a little flawed in the last one, or she couldn't have seen it coming, and we're going to make sure we're going to vet the shit out of any other guys she dates in the future. I would be there with the childcare. I would be there to babysit so she could get out and live a little despite having an infant at home. And I would encourage her to get a good fucking lawyer. I wouldn't encourage her at this moment to wonder what she did wrong. I would encourage you, however, at this moment, to ask yourself why you're doing this friendship thing wrong, because you're doing it wrong. Do it better. Be a better friend. Drop this.
Hi, Dan. I'm calling to get some feedback on the guy who is with the closet case. And I think you guys didn't really consider what the experience of this relationship is like for that guy. I think that this guy should have a 6-month period where maybe he's not out to his family and friends, but he's out to his partner's friends, this guy who called. He can say, not an ultimatum of this awesome relationship that is giving you sex, that is giving you fulfillment, is suddenly going to disappear. It's, you have 6 months to be out to all of my friends and see what that is like and see how fulfilling that is. And that can be a way for him to step out of the closet the same way that I did when I was able to be really out during my semester abroad. That was something that was really scary to me. And so being able to do it in a more controlled, contained situation was really fulfilling.
Hey, Dan, I just wanted to comment on the woman who called in and was upset about the real-life meeting with the man she had met on Tinder not living up to her expectations that had been set by the picture. And I think your advice was generally pretty spot on about not getting too emotionally involved before you've met in real life and face-to-face. But I do think you were pretty quick to buy into her premise about this being somehow his fault. And maybe he did certainly set himself up for this a little bit, but I don't know. Just, it sounded to me like what happened here is this guy wanted to have his best pictures of himself out there, as we all do when we're trying to meet and impress folks. And it seems like a really slippery slope, really fine line between misrepresenting yourself and you should have shown me just what a fat, hideous, ugly monster you were in your pictures. And just wanting to have that good picture of us where our hair looks nice and the angle is flattering and so on. And I found her anger at this guy to be a little off-putting, a little misplaced, to be honest with you. I think it's better directed at herself for having spent that emotional energy without verifying that the physical attraction was actually something that was there for her.
And we're going to leave it there. 206-302-2064 is the number here at the Savage Lovecast. If you have a question or a comment for a future show, give us a buzz. 206-302-2064. Hump, my amateur porn film festival, is coming to Brooklyn and other cities. Go to humptour.com for information about tickets and for information about submitting a film to next year's Hump Fest. Humptour.com. Follow me on Twitter @FakeDanSavage. Follow Mistress Matisse on Twitter at Mistress Matisse. And speaking of Twitter, Kelly Jane at Kelly Jane tweets, finally became a Magnum subscriber to the Savage Lovecast. Enjoy my $40, Dan. Loved the bit with Mike Birbiglia in 428. Hashtag Savage Love. Thank you very much for subscribing, Kelly Jane, to the Savage Lovecast Magnum. But it's only $36 a year. If you paid $40, I guess you tipped us. Thanks for the tip. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian and me and the tech savvy at Risk Youth and Nancy. We will all be back at you next week with another installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thanks for